From WXXI News, I'm Leah Stacey, sitting in for Evan Dawson, and this is Connections. Our connection this hour was made through games of telephone, over meals where someone said, "I heard it this way," through passed down stories about Rochester. From ghost hunting and tall tales to the state of area music venues and Rochester's signature dish, the October issue of City Magazine is all about local lore. Today, we'll excavate the topics in this issue, plus new city staffer Roberto Lagares joins the conversation to introduce himself, and we talk Best of 2024 awards. You can pick up a copy of the October issue on stands now to read all of the stories. My guest this hour, Patrick Hoskin, arts reporter for City.
Hey, Leah.
Nice to see you. Jay Milton, producer for WXXI.
Hello, hello.
Katie Eppner, producer for WXXI.
Love to have a captive audience.
And later on the second half of the hour, we'll be joined by Jacob Walsh, art director for City, and Roberto Lagares, who is our brand new multimedia reporter for City. If you're in the Finger Lakes, you can listen in on our Geneva station, WEOS 89.5 FM. And if you want to join the conversation otherwise, you can email us at connections@wxxi.org or call 844-295-8255. Or 585-263-9994. So we had a lot of fun with this issue. And the reason that everybody is in-house and on the show today is because, well, Jay, you're featured in the issue.
I know. I'm very happy to be.
Yeah, we're going to dig into your alter ego. And Katie, you had a great idea for this. Is this your third city story? Fourth?
I don't know. If you want to count the two entries for the January edition.
No, I feel like we count that. Yeah. Your third or fourth or sixth piece of writing. Yeah.
Something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Pat, you wrote half the issue.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah.
not really. Close.
I'm happy to do it.
You're close.
I'm happy to always do it. So I'll say that on live radio and have to be permanently
on the record.
On the record. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's all very good, Pat.
Oh, thanks. Wow.
Yeah.
We'll come back every time.
He's saying that because you wrote the piece about him.
Yeah.
That's true. That is true.
Well, yeah. Before we dig into each piece in the issue, because we're going to talk about most of them, I want to know from the three of you, what is your definition of lore? Because I got this question when I would tell people, like, oh, our October issue, because last year we did death. Nobody has questions about what that means, right? I think that people were surprised at some of the ways that we covered death in that issue. And it was, like, a very fulfilling issue for a lot of us who worked on it. It was, you know, we really got to think outside the box. And this year, lore was also Rebecca Rafferty's idea. And
shout out.
Yeah, shout out to Becca. She has some great ideas. And so even though she is now at Writers and Books and not on staff, she is freelancing for us. She didn't contribute to this issue, but the theme is so good. So I do want to give her credit for that. But when you all heard the word lore, you know, when we're first in the pitch meeting, you're thinking about it, like, what's the first thing that comes to mind? Pat, I'm going to start with you.
I like it in thinking about it in terms of like a journalistic magazine, because when I think of lore, it's like, may not necessarily be factually true necessarily, but you're talking about legends and you're talking about like stories and things that over time they feel like they become true because they become so widespread. So when you're talking about, you're not necessarily trying to like report it out in the same way where you can't, where you maybe can't, you can't like confirm every single fact, but it's like about the larger truth of like the lore, like the legend, you know,
like
which I think
fish
is kind of cool.
Like the fish was this big, and then all of a sudden it was this big.
Yeah.
Like we know there's a fish.
Yes.
We just don't know exactly what size it was.
It's like a game of telephone, as you mentioned in the intro. Like, the story starts somewhere, becomes somewhere else. Yeah, it's cool.
I did quite a bit of Googling in writing this story. And actually, part of that led me to Google how, if we remember, a couple years ago, White Lady's Castle at Durand Park got its own plaque.
Yep.
And I looked into that because I was like, well, my topic, which is a forgotten amusement park on the shores of Rondaquite Bay, that should get its own plaque.
Yeah.
and I looked it up, and the plaque is Legends and Lore. Uh-huh. And the amusement park I write about did exist. So that didn't quite fit the bill of the White Lady's Castle plaque that they got, because that is lore, which, like, I believe, as I recall, cannot be confirmed.
To me, when I hear lore, it like it's like person to person. Like that's how the stories are like told. Like it isn't necessarily, you know, I almost feel like the second you put it in writing, it's not lore anymore. It's like that kind of like person to person discussion of like something that happened. And then, yeah, when you write it down, it becomes concrete, which to me is like, is that lore anymore?
Yeah.
Are any of these things lore now that we wrote about them?
Yeah. I thought about this the whole time I was editing this issue. And I think it's like lore was almost this prompt, right? Like if we were a lit magazine and we're like, here's your prompt. And I loved what everyone did with it because I feel like there were so many different variations on lore. And even just listening to the three of you talk about how you perceive it is, you know, different. And at first I was like, I started to get a little bit nervous. I always do because anxiety is my drug. But I was like, oh, this issue, like, this is risky. Like, how is this going to go? And then the story started to roll in. And I was like, oh, this is so interesting. Like, I love reading every story in this issue. And, you know, we did a couple of just traditional arts pieces. You know, the largest one being yours and Daniel's co-reported piece, which I'm going to have you talk about in a second. But we have a lot. There's some legends. The White Lady's in there. Sam Patch, who was not fictional, but there are a lot of variations on that story. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of this, I almost think of lore as like our personal interpreted history. And I think you started to touch on that, Jay. It's like, and I wrote this in my editor's letter, there's like family lore, right? Like my family, my dad's side of the family is from here. And there's always like these stories. And I remember the first time I started, I like put something on Instagram a couple years ago about my family and my aunt, my dad's oldest sister, so like the me of his family, she DM'd me and she was like, hey, love the post. Here's what you got wrong. And I was like, ugh. Because my family lore, like how I've been told by my dad or like my uncle, who is not as old as my aunt and doesn't have like as much history and like facts, that was my version of the family lore, right? So it is, it's funny, Pat, like how you said journalistically, it's like, oh, but then we were able to take these stories and really fact check a lot about the lore and just have fun. This issue is very fun and very interesting. And it actually made me more proud to live here because like our history is so cool.
Oh,
it's just so like there's so much that happened here. Am I biased? Maybe. But I also think I'm kind of a tough critic. So when I was reading these stories, I was like, oh, this is good. But Pat, I wanted you to talk about your stories in this issue because they really range in topic.
Yeah, that's true.
I'll let you pick what you want to start with.
So chronologically, first in the magazine, my first piece in here is a preview of an upcoming stage play called The Summerland, which is essentially... It's so perfect. It's opening next month, and it so perfectly fits into this idea of lore because it centers around the Fox sisters, who were essentially these three sisters who kind of helped kick off the spiritualism movement in Western New York here. And obviously that had such like far-reaching consequences and implications. I sort of note this in the story, but like it's possible that Sir Arthur Conan Doyle sort of like took in a lot of the spiritualist ideas and these readings and communing with the dead, all these like different spiritualist factors, and helped kind of put those into creating the character of Sherlock Holmes and his sort of like, you know, deductions that he would do that are like borderline supernatural. But the play itself it weaves together. It's written by Kate Royal, who is a SUNY Geneseo grad. She's a former artist in residence at Muck Theater. It really weaves together all these themes about like where Rochester was in the pre-Civil War 19th century as this nexus of progressive thought with abolitionism, with women's suffrage, obviously being very close to Seneca Falls. And I believe it takes place in 1848, which is when the Seneca Falls Convention was. So you have all these different progressive movements happening. It sort of helps set the stage for why spiritualism may have caught on as well, because it's like there's all this new exploration of thought happening. And then here you go with, well, I don't know, like maybe these girls are talking to the dead. Maybe they're communing with the dead in some way. The same people who are very open and like progressively minded about these causes might have that same open-mindedness to sort of a yeah, more of a supernatural bent. So, yeah, the play is sort of centers around those themes, and yeah, it's being produced by the Company Theater. It runs November 8th through the 17th, and yeah, it really,
that's gonna be neat.
I'm excited to see how all those themes, because I was able to speak with Kate, the playwright, and as well as the director, and I'm just, yeah, I'm eager to see all those themes sort of play together.
Yeah, me too. I also, side note here, I'm going to create some lore. So we have the Fox sisters to thank for Benedict Cumberbatch essentially playing Sherlock.
I mean, I think that's...
Can I make that connection?
I think so. Also Robert Downey Jr. in
okay.
those movies. Yeah,
yeah,
I
feel we'll get, like we'll throw him a bone.
There's like a dotted line between those portrayals and initially, you
that's
know,
really interesting, though. I didn't
farmhouse.
Know that.
Yeah. And I think it's like, you know, it's worldly writers and worldly thinkers like going to these conferences, going to these, you know, these big orations at Corinthian Hall here in Rochester, but also like elsewhere as the movement grows and just sort of sharing these ideas with each other. But it all really started with these three sisters who, well, two of them lived in a house in, I think, Seneca County initially, but then their older sister, Leah, actually moved them here to Rochester. And so Rochester here is where she was sort of showing them off.
She was their PR person.
Yes. And really monetizing their abilities, their supposed abilities to be able to commune with the dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Such an interesting story. I feel like a lot of people don't know that that's connected here, but.
Yeah. And how, you know, we're here on State Street. We're not very far from where Corinthian Hall was, where the show will be, and the Temple Theater is also very close to where it was too, so there's a lot of history just in downtown Rochester specifically about that, which is cool.
Yeah, great.
It's funny, I feel like when modern people think about ghosts, we think about like the Fox sisters is like 1800s, but like gosh, their ghosts must have been
The ghosts that they were
crusty.
Talking to.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Did
yeah.
you say crusty?
Yeah. Come on. What do you think about a 1700s person?
Yeah, a little. There's some dust.
That's true.
Yeah. So you have that piece.
That's the first one chronically, and then you mentioned the piece that I worked on with Dan Kushner. No longer at City. Dan's moved on to do some other stuff. But one of the one of the last things that he worked on was this piece that him and I co-reported together. Not quite so fitting in the theme of lore, but also fitting into a larger story about, you know, one of the ongoing art stories of Rochester, which is that essentially we talk to a lot of concert promoters, we talk to a lot of venue owners and people who run the various places around town for music, and sort of kept hearing the same thing, which was Rochester could really benefit from more mid-sized venues. We're talking like 1,000 capacity to 1,200-ish.
Yep.
We have Water Street. Mm-hmm. We used to have Anthology, no longer. So Water Street kind of right now is one of the only ones that can fit sort of that capacity. And when you don't have as many, what we kept hearing was that really limits who can actually come to play here. Because we have a lot of like smaller size rooms, and we have a lot of and we have, you know, a handful of theaters, and we have like larger rooms as well, but we don't have that sort of mid-size, and often it's touring acts and nationally touring acts who may end up go to Buffalo or to Syracuse or to something.
Toronto.
Toronto because they don't have, or Albany because they don't have, because Rochester does not have something that capacity. So it's interesting to talk to a lot of promoters and a lot of people who run venues and kind of hear that, because Dan and I approached this thinking, and, you know, obviously we talked about this too, Leah, before we started, but that's something that we noticed.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we were curious to hear from the folks who actually are in charge of putting these shows together and see if they agreed, and they absolutely agreed. And I'm curious to see like what will come of that. And you know, there's a really good diversity of voices in this piece, people who run venues of all sizes, people who book concerts, people who are in charge of bringing bands in, and they all kind of said the same thing. So I'm curious to know what the next like few years will look like as that bears itself out.
Yeah, me too. I'd love to see a good show here. And I mean, there are many good shows here, but I also have driven to Toronto, I think bi-monthly for the last year, to see some of the bands that I am really keen on. So yeah, let's do this. Somebody open something else.
Yeah, because like then you don't have to leave the choice up to the people who are doing the routing, right? Where they don't have to go. Let's make that left from Cleveland, like up to Toronto, as opposed to like when they can keep going straight on the 90 and maybe hit Rochester on the way to New York or to Philly or wherever they're going.
Totally. We're on the way.
Yeah.
Right on the 90. Yeah.
It's true.
Cool. Yeah. That story turned out really, really well.
And the word void is in the headlines of void in the local music scene. So void is kind of a lore adjacent word, I feel like. So in that way, it somewhat fits. But
yeah. we always try to make everything fit. But sometimes we're just doing good arts journalism. Because that is also our job in a reissue. Yeah.
That's true.
Great.
It was fun making the connections to lore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I know you leafed through every page and because you are so good at that stuff. So I'm sure you like looked at all of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that too.
Is your next one Jay's?
The next one is Jay. Sorry, Jay, you've been so patient.
That's
okay. So Jay and I
He's
sat
commuting.
Down. And yeah, that's right. That's right. Speaking of commuting. So, I mean, part of the reason why we sat down was because outside of your duties here at WXXI, you have some other duties that you do that you've sort of self-assigned.
Yes. I don't know how to describe myself, but I would say I'm a paranormal documentarian. I
hope that's on LinkedIn.
Yeah, it should be. I have always been a very skeptical person. And but growing up was always watching those like paranormal shows like Ghost Hunters and stuff like that, just like for fun. And I went to an event at Rolling Hills Asylum in Batavia. At this point, it must be like 10 years ago. and did not expect anything to happen, just knowing how reality TV is made and working in television. And I experienced a lot of stuff I couldn't explain. And that kind of, you know, as a documentarian, a filmmaker, producer, I just like became obsessed with capturing those experiences myself. And from that, it grew to me producing my own web series called Ghost Show, which focuses mostly on local, like Rochester regional kind of locations that are supposedly haunted. I also work with Katrina Weidman and Heather Taddy on their web series called Travel the Dead, and that's more nationally, you know, their locations are a bit more across the country. But I basically travel around to places that people say are haunted and listen to their stories of experiences and stuff that they've had happen to them, and then I try to replicate it and most importantly, capture it on camera so that I can prove to myself and everybody else that I'm not crazy.
You've got quite the quiver of gear.
Yes.
Too.
It is like, I mean, it is very much, you know, it's a labor of love. And, you know, I don't, it's funny too, like, especially like on the paranormal side, like you see on all these shows and everything, everybody has all these like fancy equipment, but like, it's not scientific. Like, there's no way to like prove the existence of a ghost. And like, even I have a hard time saying like, oh, we're talking with dead people. Like that doesn't make sense to me. Like I have just like come to understand within myself that like there are things on this planet that we don't understand yet. Mm-hmm. And it could be in, you know, 10, 20 years that there is a logical explanation for some of this stuff. And we just didn't know it, and it isn't what we thought it was, and like I'm 100% open to that being the case. But all I know is that I have been in situations where I have seen and heard things that defy explanation, and I am now obsessed with trying to figure out. I don't know if I'll ever find out what it is, but I am obsessed with capturing it and putting it on display.
Which, you know, we should probably sneak peek what we're going to do on Monday.
Oh, yeah. So I am
Which
going
I don't
to
really
take,
want
to
do. Yeah.
I'm going to take you, Leah, to Rolling Hills and kind of talk about some of the experiences I've had there. And hopefully we can experience something ourselves and give ourselves a good scare.
Whoa.
And we're taking Birdo. So initiation.
Excellent.
Katie has passed on this opportunity of a lifetime.
Hard pass. Not just a pass.
I'm trying to get her to help me.
I'm going
to
cry on the way there.
With the paranormal stuff, and I can't get her to a paranormal location. Maybe during the day I could.
Yeah, we're going at 10 p.m.
Yeah.
Now, why is that, though? I mean, is there one thing in particular you're most scared of happening, or just the unknown?
I just don't want any of that to happen to me. Growing up, I would always ask my mom, like, is our house haunted? And she had just the best answer, and I'm just sticking with that she just said, I don't let it in. I'm not opening the door. I'm not going anywhere near the door. I'm good. There's enough on this side of the plane that entertains me. I'm good.
The
I'm
one thing
good.
I love about this stuff, though, is that like almost everybody has a story of something weird that's happened to them
for
that
sure.
they're like, I can't explain it. And like to me, like that's what I love about it, is that, you know, it's like a perfect icebreaker conversation. Like, oh, you know, have you ever seen a ghost? Like, you know, and then it gets people talking about like, oh man, this one time I like, you know, heard my name, got called in the middle of the night, it woke me up. Like, you know, it's like everybody has these stories, and to me, like that personal kind of conversation you have with people, and you know how some people get excited about that stuff and some people are afraid of it, but like just being able to talk to people and hearing everybody's relationship to like stuff that is unexplained has always been super interesting to me.
Because I don't really have one, but then I think so after we had our conversation about this, I was like, yeah, why is that? Why don't I really have one? And I feel like it's probably because I've dismissed it outright, and I haven't like let the door open, so to speak, like even a little crack. And so now I'm trying to really like rethink about stuff, or like just be like a smidge more open.
Yeah.
Because I do think that they're like, whether or not, you know, as you were saying, whether or not it's like you're talking to a dead person, like what it's just like in the realm of the supernatural, the paranormal, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And like it can be fun.
I've always said too that like my most like substantial experiences like with the paranormal, like the minute it happens, it's so unbelievable that your brain tries to rationalize it.
Yes.
And like I have found that like when I like truly experience something that I cannot find an explanation for, that like an hour later my brain's like, that didn't happen. And like you're like trying to like,
we've talked about this because I've had too many experiences.
And I find when I'm like in my own head being like, that didn't happen, like it definitely happened.
It definitely happened.
Wow.
Okay, I don't want to run out of time before we talk about Katie's piece.
Oh yeah.
Not haunted, but a ghost of it, what it once was.
Yeah. So I'll start by saying, as I was writing this piece, where do I start? I bought a house in East Irondequoit 2 years ago, and an old trolley line ran through our backyard. So I just did some research, and it just led me down this just incredible rabbit hole. I got to shout out the book Irondequoit Story, written in the 60s by town historian Maud I. West. It's an incredible book. I have it here.
I wish everyone could see it. It is dog-eared.
Yeah. I've got a... you know, sticky notes marking like special rocks that she shouts out. And someday I'm going to go visit all those rocks. But anyway, an incredible part of this story is how many resorts existed on Irondequoit Bay. And it led me down this rabbit hole of research. And I really focused on this place called Dreamland Park, also known as Glenhaven Park, serviced by the Glenhaven Trolley. And to really paint a picture, this beautiful thing, this called the Pink Ticket Trip. For 25 cents, you could take a trolley north along Lake Avenue to Charlotte, hang out at Ontario Beach Park. At some point, you could hop on a steamship that would take you about 4 miles east, drop you off at Seabreeze, hang out there, enjoy the promenades, the dance halls, what have you. And then you could hop on another steamer in Irondequoit Bay that would stop at the dozen or so summer resorts along the shores there. And then the last stop would be at Glenhaven Park, where you would disboard and hop on the trolley back into Rochester. And that would take a whole day. So beautiful. And where lore comes into this story is that I think most of us might be familiar with Bay Park West, down on the shores there. It's a big bike park. You've also got the Irondequoit Fish and Game Club and Sutter's Marina. And nowhere you could dig, you could, you know, tramp through the woods, there is not a trace of an amusement park that actually used to be there, with a roller coaster, a Ferris wheel, a merry-go-round, a hotel, like a whole midway. I mean, it's just... the more I list it, the more I'm just like, how does this not exist? That's where the lore comes in, because as I like, basically I was doing all this research and just posting it on Instagram for like 2 years, and I'm so happy to like have this outlet finally to do something with it. Because also, I mean, it didn't seem like a lot of people were talking about it. Of course, as I was doing my research, I got a shout out, Emily Morey. She works in the local history and genealogy department at the library, and she actually posted a whole article about it on their blog in August. So I actually hit her up. I said, just so you know, I'm also writing this, but it had a different spin because, gosh, what I've been trying to say. The lore about this is that Dreamland is like buried in an unmarked grave. And for so much of human existence, an unmarked grave is like banishes you to a eternity in purgatory. You're not dead, but you're not alive. You're not like in the afterlife. And I feel like that's where Dreamland is at because nobody mm-hmm. knows it was there. No one talks about it. So it's just sort of like you're just tramping on an unmarked grave.
It's like the opposite of all those abandoned theme parks where they're all overgrown and mm-hmm. stuff, but it's like they still very much exist, but they're just not used. This is the complete opposite of that, where there's no trace that there
not
once used to be one, which is wild.
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
I feel like you opened the door, Katie.
This is why I looked up the plaque. Like, I want yeah. there to be a plaque at least. Yeah. And actually, yeah. I've seen somebody in Lucien Barré Park, which again is off Empire Boulevard, just post like laminated articles about what that place used to be, which was a U.S. Army Corps of Engineers like shooting range.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
I actually may have that wrong, engineers. But yeah, it is now that I've finally written this article and like got my energy out that way, mm-hmm. I'm going to divert my energy to getting some sort of plaque, some sort of signage that it even ever existed. And of yeah. course, there is like so much infrastructure and like societal, I don't know, trends of the time that are tied into all of this, which,
oh, yeah.
you know, will answer to its demise, but also its beginnings, of course.
Yeah. So. I mean, we were a huge summer destination for celebrities and the wealthy. I mean, the Rockefellers were here. It was a crazy time in Rochester's history mm-hmm. that Dreamland was.
One article quoted Rochester as being a paradise for poor people because of all of our outlets for recreation. And it was also a time where shorter work weeks, mm-hmm. more disposable income, and the infrastructure was available that people could have fun, like for the yeah. first time.
There was a lot of public transportation. That's what
yes.
I'm always just shocked by when I read. It's like there was so much more public transportation available back then, but
most of it was replaced by buses.
Yeah.
And so I mean,
but even the waterways, you know.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's like when you were talking about the steamers, I'm like, man, can you
yeah.
imagine just like getting on a steamer for 4 miles? It's like how when you go downstate, you just like take the ferry.
Yeah.
And
that's
true. It's wild to me to think that like once we had that infrastructure, but.
And speaking of ferries, there is a shout out to the former Fast Ferry, right? Speaking of lore, there's a shout out to
I was thinking about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of departed ferries.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also, if I may use this platform to shout out the New York Museum of Transportation.
Yes.
My husband and I took a little nice Sunday drive out there. Just, I really was just looking to get FaceTime with the people who worked there so I could get some of their photos from their archive, but I ended up loving it. It is so
Are
cool.
you a member now?
I'm about to be. I'm doing it right now.
Signing up right now.
No, but everyone should go visit. It's great. Yeah. They have All buses. Right. They have Rochester trolleys that went through the subway. They have one trolley there that was used on Rochester streets, decommissioned in the 30s. At some point, somebody bought it from a junkyard. This would have been a great story. Jeez. Turned it into a house. A double wide. They bought two trolleys, put them next to each other. And in the 80s or 90s, the Transit Museum rescued it. And now it's in their warehouse and they're in the process of restoring it. But it's like unbelievable. The photos they have of this thing, just like, I mean, how do they even transport it into this field where they lived in it for decades?
That is so cool. And I want to see photos of that. Yeah.
No, you should just go yourself.
I should just go. Yeah.
I'll go with you.
All right. Perfect. Well, thank you all. Pat, you're going to stay for the next half an hour. We're going to take our short break of the hour. And when we come back, more from our guests. We're going to be joined by Jacob Walsh, our director for City, and Roberto Lagares, who is our new multimedia reporter. We'll talk to you after the break. I'm Leah Stacey. Coming up in our second hour, we'll hear the story behind the Swan family of restaurants, how it started, how it's going, and what's next. Welcome back from WXXI News. I'm Leah Stacey sitting in for Evan Dawson, and you are listening to Connections. Today we're talking about City's October issue, which is themed around lore. And we've just heard from Jay Milton and Katie Eppner. Thanks so much for joining us. I am currently sitting with Patrick Hoskin, arts reporter for City. Welcome
Hello.
Back. And Jacob Walsh, art director for City. We're just a little game of musical chairs here in the studio. And Roberto Lagueras, who is our brand new multimedia reporter for City. This is the last day of your first week.
It is.
How do you feel?
I feel amazing.
Great. Welcome.
I feel alive.
Your first time on the show, right?
Yes.
Great.
That's really good first words for Connections. I feel amazing.
I feel amazing.
Feel yeah. alive.
Yeah.
We love that.
Happy Friday.
So we're gonna change gears a little bit because we're gonna hear from Berto a little bit about your background, and we're gonna talk about, well, Jake, I want you to talk about the cover of the lore issue.
Totally. So when we were putting this together, lore is a pretty expansive category, I feel. So that was sort of a bit of a design challenge for me to tackle in my head with our creative director and with our writers as the story started coming in. And the thing that my brain kept going back to was this area in a park in the Lower Falls region where there is this slab of marble, and it's called the Seat of Forgetting and Remembering, which... when I went and stumbled across it on like a bike ride one time, I was so moved by it and it stuck in my head. And you sit there and there are these four pillars, and I'm forgetting the name of the artist right now, but it's from, I believe, the early aughts. Is it in here? Leah's signaling to me. I can't do that right now. Someone will find it while I'm talking, or maybe not. Who knows?
I'm just not sure about the pronunciation, but I'll go for it. Adriana Epel Slutsky.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
That's maybe something I should
Which is in the issue, but yeah.
It is in the issue.
To be fair, it is in the issue. It just wasn't top of Jake's mind, which is fine.
We did want to shout out the artist in the credits so you can see the credit along. It's on our staff page. Yeah.
On the masthead.
On the masthead.
There it is.
With a little thumbnail.
So yeah, I didn't have that locked and loaded, but there are four pillars that are very unique looking and very beautiful. And to me, it was a very moving experience to just sit there. So I kind of pulled, I guess, from my personal life to come up with this cover this month. But I really like it. And I'm also realizing that I really love the color orange. And that's just kind of how that shook out this month. But I think that there's a lot encaptured by the Seat of Forgetting and Remembering. Something about that is very very poignant to me, and I think it's very beautiful, and I wanted to feature it on the cover.
And can I say, and I'm not just saying this because we're live on the air, but this is my favorite City cover since I joined 6 months
Ooh.
Ago. This is my favorite one.
Yeah. I love that.
Very
cool.
Shade
to all my other covers. Patrick! No, I'm just kidding.
Glass half empty.
That's really sweet.
Right.
Thank you so much. No, it's full today. Thank you, Patrick. I love this one. I like this one, too. It's one of my personal favorites. And I think like many of the covers that I personally tend to like, because these are groupthink efforts, and it's important to have all of our, you know, the expanse of our stories represented on the cover here. This is like one of my favorite ones as well. I like it a lot.
My favorite since I started too.
Yeah, very nice.
For sure.
Berto's always ready.
It's true.
Jake, along with this cover, you also have been working on the brand for our Best of 2024 Awards.
Yes.
Which launched officially yesterday. We've already been getting some first round nominations. And out of all of us sitting here right now, you've experienced the most Best of iterations. And we've changed it quite a bit in the last couple of years. So for those who might not know, if there are any folks who don't know, what is Best of Rochester?
Best of Rochester is something that we do every year. It's a longstanding tradition of alt weeklies across America, which City used to be before we became a monthly arts and culture magazine. But this is a tradition that we've kept alive because our readers, for the most part, seem to really enjoy it. It's something that will always encourage people to interact with City and kind of use this as what it's meant to be, which is sort of a center of a community, and something that observes and reports on community and the arts and culture scene here. I've done, I want to say it's been like six of these now, six or seven of these. My first week on this job was like running the best of event with our small team, like 7 years ago. But it is what a lot of people say it is. It is a beautifully structured popularity contest for you to tell us and everybody what your favorite things in Rochester are.
Yeah.
And the categories are ever-changing. We kind of adjust based on the feedback that we get every year. We get a lot of feedback every year, which we do appreciate. And it's just like, it's mostly a fun and beautiful way for you to like share your opinion on the place that you live and the community that you exist in.
Yeah.
This is our first year on a new platform, which is something that people have noticed.
Shout out to Reddit.
Shout out to Reddit letting us know. You do. So I guess, should I go into the little bit of nuts and bolts or stay in the broad view? What do
you
say?
Yeah, I think you could walk people through like kind of how so it is up on our homepage right now.
Yep.
So if you want to kind of follow along, pull it up on your phone. We have a QR code right inside the October issue.
Rockcitymag.com.
Rockcitymag.com. Yes. Yeah. And there's kind of two phases of this, right? There's the nominations where you write in your favorites, and then it goes to the second phase, which is really heavy voting. And that's, we try to have four final candidates, but that always depends on if four actually got nominated.
Yeah, it's usually that. Mm-hmm. So this year, you do have to enter an email address, which for many people is a pain in the butt, but for way more people, myself included, it's a way to verify your vote so that people don't stuff the ballot box, which is always a fun little curveball that happens every year with Best of Rochester. So, you know, for the most part, people are accountable for their votes and what they say, which is good to me, at least. It'll ensure the quality of the votes.
And like you said, we're not spamming people.
No spam. That's right. Oh, yeah. We were talking about this earlier. I feel like people are sometimes reluctant to give their email address, but I promise you, if there was going to be a spam email, I would have to write it. And I don't want to do that. So all I want to do is make sure that you're able to vote. That's all I want to do.
Yeah, this is really, it's such a fun thing for the city. You know, there's not always chances in this life to get an award. And it's fun to know that people love your product or your business. And, you know, an important distinction with this that I feel like we are clarifying year after year is that we don't pick the finalists. We don't pick the winners. We simply provide this platform for you to choose and nominate, and then we tally the winners.
Yeah.
And we're going to have our Best of Awards party at Radio Social on January 3rd. So save the date, and Jake will be hosting that.
I'm going to be doing exactly what I'm doing now, but into a live microphone.
Yeah.
It's been a couple of years since I've emceed the event. We usually will get like a local comedian or a trivia host or someone who has charisma on a microphone that hasn't been me for the last couple of years. It's going to be the last time I did it, I wore a wig and did a character. So I was also 24. We'll do it different this time. I'll just be myself.
It's the great comeback.
Yeah.
So Patrick and Berto, this is your first Best of Awards. What are you excited about? Anything? Are you, after looking at the categories? What's your take so far on this?
I love the specificity. I really do. Like, it's not just like, what's your favorite, you know, restaurant? It's like, you know, the more specific you can get, I feel like the more it really captures what we actually do and experience and love about our city here and the culture and the art scene that we do here. So I do love that. I love looking at like how granular can we get without being like, what's your favorite taco place on this particular block? Like, we're not going to get that specific. But
yeah.
I do like that. And I think that that really does both mirror like the way that most people live and consume. That's the consume culture. Oh,
yeah,
sorry. Hate
I know,
it.
Right?
I'm going to do a redo. People experience culture.
Next.
Yeah. I really do think though, it hews very close to the way people experience culture here and what they love about it. So I love that. I love, and what is there? There's over 100.
It's like 138 or something.
Yeah. Categories.
138. Up from 102 last year, because we kind of scrubbed it last year and then we got feedback about some we should add back, and we kept a running list of things that we thought should be added. We also really keep an eye to that specificity. We're really keeping an eye on like things that are happening in the city so that it feels like we're paying attention because we are.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that also, like, I feel like is really in line with, yeah, just people, the way people talk about it amongst friends, or, you know, having 138, whatever categories really is much more profound than just like a broad overview of like, I don't know, 10 or 20 or something. I guess you don't get the yeah. same representation of what it is that actually people love about this place, living here and being in this community too. So that's what I really like about it. So I'm pretty stoked to like sort of dive in there and see what people are saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, I think it's like seeing the behind the scenes, the intentionality, like behind it all, how much we are really, like you said, paying attention to the community. It's not like these catch-all categories, but also to be able to see all of the categories coming in, the nominations, and paying attention to the wider range, because as a consumer on the other side, like, I'm guilty of this, of just, you know, you're skimming for the ones that you care about or like that you can attest to, but it's like,
or you recognize
from, I'm starting to recognize all these other categories I did not pay attention to before, so it's really interesting to see behind the curtain a little bit.
Like best family day trip and best family friendly attraction being two separate categories is great. I say this as a dad, but also like it is just nice to know, because like when I think of those, I think of those very differently. You know, I think of a day trip and an attraction, I don't know, a family friendly attraction, I think of those very differently.
Although,
so that's
you
just
probably could spend a day at the Strong.
100%. You could spend multiple days.
Multiple days. But yeah, I think it makes sense for those to be separate. And yeah, family content is also very important, because this is a family city.
That's true.
And arts and culture should be from the time you are young. I firmly believe that as a non-parent. Yeah.
I also want to point out, too, that if the number 138 is daunting to you, you can absolutely skip categories.
Oh, yes.
If you don't have expertise in those areas or you just don't care, that's okay. I feel like one of the good things about Best Of, and one of the fun things about taking this survey, which I used to do every year before I worked here because it was just fun, is like ripping through and realizing like, oh, I got an answer for this. And if you don't, it's like, oh, wow, cool. A blind spot of mine. I can learn about this or not. Maybe you don't want to learn how to dance or whatever. Like that's.
Yeah.
So all that is to say, like, if you've got opinions on like 50 of these things at best, like, don't let that stop you. The only
Still
thing you
helpful.
Have to do is put your email address in. We brought the barrier to entry up off the ground so that robots can't do it.
Yeah.
So that's all that is. But yeah, you know, you can get in there, you do whatever you want. This is the write-in phase, so you can truly write in whatever you want. Just, you know, be cool.
We do, and there is importantly, we left the end. It's either this round or the next round. We always let you give us an idea of categories if you think we're missing anything. So we are listening, and that's why we've added so many back and in. But yesterday I was talking to a friend and I was like, Best Of launched. And she was like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited to go home and like make a cup of tea and curl up and just like put in all the stuff. So I know that people look forward to it, and I love that. And it was also cool to see in that Reddit thread, we were talking about that. People get it. Like they understood why we're asking for the email address. We're a small team, and it makes the lift on us a little bit easier too, when we don't have to go through and like comb for ballot stuffing or IP addresses. And so, yeah, we're trying to be efficient so that we can tell more stories in the community as Best Of is going as well.
Yeah, so. I'll get to do more photography and design instead of combing through an Excel sheet and finding duplicate votes. It's inside baseball, but we thank you in advance for using this new platform. It's not hard. That's the great thing, is if you've been on the internet, it's very easy to use.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So speaking of storytelling, we have a new voice on air with us.
Hello.
And Berto, I would love for you to just tell our listeners a little bit about your background and maybe give a sneak peek of some of the things you're working on already.
Yes. So it depends on how far back you want to go. We can go all the way back to when I wanted to be a YouTuber back in the day.
Because you're young enough that was like a valid career choice.
That was a valid career choice. Actually, I was probably on the cusp of it being frowned upon.
But like it was even an option.
But
like,
it was an option for sure. And then that actually led me to like the career path that I ended up taking anyway. I left the business, like accounting, marketing major, and I was like, I did one film class, and I said, yeah, this, I can't believe this is a requirement. This is amazing. And then we went that route. And so I am a graduate from SUNY Brockport for media production, journalism, and broadcasting. If you've seen the announcement on our socials, some of this might be familiar. And if you're not, what are you doing?
At Rock City Mag.
Yes. And I previous life was doing things for in the marketing space for brands like Bud Light. Went over to Apple, both retail and corporate, doing editing and producing there. And then most recently for Monroe, another local company here, as their multimedia designer. So now I'm here. So it's like I'm in the public eye, which is really interesting and new and fresh, and I like it. So,
and I should say, Birdo has been in City before,
yeah,
including the piece that I wrote for our June issue, which was our Photo City issue. Yeah. Wrote a story on the Cinestill company, and Birdo, who is a great photographer, has used Cinestill, a couple different of their film stocks. Yeah,
big Cinestill guy.
But yeah, and actually showed up wearing a Cinestill hoodie, I should say. but one of your photos we actually used in the piece to talk about the particular quality of that film and how it, the lighting, how it does well in better lighting, in certain kinds of lighting. And so we ran that, and actually you talked about that sort of why you use that film, but also we ran the photo next to your descriptions of that too. So yeah, so your work has been featured before, which is cool.
And yes. I think your face is in that one.
Yes, I was.
You were one of our
Clay Patrick McBride.
Yeah.
Got a nice tintype photo, which was a bucket list item for me. So that was really, really cool. I feel like I'm now cemented in my family's history. So this is like my great, great, great grandchildren will look back at that tintype and be very confused, but that's okay.
Weird. I didn't know that Grandpa was born in the 1800s.
I'm a time traveler, so.
So tell us a little bit about what you're hoping to work on / what you're already working on, because you really jumped in.
Yes, yes. We're working on some great pieces. I'm pretty lucky to be. Are we talking about the next?
You can,
piece
yeah, you can
a little bit.
Our next issue is our food and beverage issue, so
yes.
We are currently working on that,
which is a topic I love. So
yeah.
That just really worked out. So being able to dive into the restaurant industry and you know, touching on pieces like that, but bringing like visual elements to it, because obviously the written word is very powerful, and then being able to complement the story with, whether that's photo or video, ideally video moving forward even more so. So I'm, you know, working on pieces like that where we're looking for restaurants that partake in things such as like traditions of family meal or staff meal, depending on, you know, who you're talking to. You know, working on pieces like how to launch or announce the newest issues, and just bringing some flair to it, because everyone here works so hard, and it's nice to have that like end polished effect when it's, you know, for the public eye. Like they want to see, they don't see all the hard work that goes into it all the time, so it's nice to be able to put a bow on it and hand it over and show them like this is something we're all very proud of, and being able to be part of that process is amazing. So
yeah, and I think also like being able to tell more of our stories visually,
yeah,
has been something that we have wanted to increase for a long time. There are platforms where we are not able to meet some of our readers the way that we wanted to, and so having you on the team is a really exciting new chapter for us.
Documenting the documentarians,
yeah,
is how I'm telling myself in my head that that's what I'm going to be doing, and I think that's huge. I think it'll connect people more. Brings a little a human element, which is extremely important to me. So I'm excited.
Great. Well, I just want to go around really rapid fire and tell us your something that you're all excited about for the next issue. We'll give a little, because that's going to be our next city social as well. We're skipping October, but we will have a city social TBD for our November issue. So something you're working on for that issue that you're excited about, Patrick.
Two words, veggie burgers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Jake?
Patrick stole mine. No, just kidding. But I think if all goes according to plan, I'm doing the photography for that one. I'm coming out of photography retirement a little bit. Something that I'm very excited about is seeing Birdo's first story. I'm very excited to see, because this
Thank
is,
you.
Leah touched on this a little bit, but I am very, very excited to have someone who is more visually inclined, like also be like writing the stories. I'm very excited to see how that manifests. And I can't wait to see that.
I appreciate it.
A bit of a tease.
Yeah.
You'll have to pick up the issue for free. Oh no.
Oh no.
All right. Birdo,
for
yours?
Me, I mean, it is, I would be lying if I didn't say it's my first piece that I'm most Ooh. Excited about. I think it's, I don't know. It's new, it's different. And I'm really excited to be a part of it.
Well, thank you all for being here. Patrick, Jake, Birdo. Thank you to Rob and Julie in the booth. Thanks to Evan Dawson and Megan Mack for letting me host a show about the magazine I edit every month. I'm Leah Stacey. Thanks for listening to Member Supported Public Radio.